Monster Man, Special Episode, Hydra. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode, brought to you by the generosity and public spirit of my Patreon backers, and in particular, of Patreon backer Cassandra. If you'd like to be like Cassandra and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And if you do that, you'll also get access to all new episodes of my other podcast, Patron Deities, which is just starting a season on Haitian voodoo. So Cassandra, thank you very much for your support, and I hope that you enjoy today's episode. Speaking of Patreon backers, before we get started, please join me in welcoming two new subscribers, Alexander Spaulding and Jack Crawford. Thank you both. Your support means a lot to me. Okay, so Cassandra's asked me to talk about the Hydra, a monster from Greek mythology. Now, I covered the Hydra for about 5 minutes in episode 29, way back in December 2017. I don't blame you for not having listened to that episode. I just re-listened to it myself, and boy, I was not scared of dead air back then. Goodness me. I feel like my editing and my sense of timing has really come a long way. So if, for whatever reason, you didn't go back and listen to episode 29 again, let's briefly recap. In Greek mythology, the precise details of the Hydra vary from telling to telling, but there are some elements that occur in many of the stories. The Hydra is a venomous serpent-like creature. It dwells in or around a body of water, specifically the marshy region around the Lake of Lerna, south of Argos. It has many heads, although exactly how many is not always clear. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. I think 7 is kind of the standard figure. But there are some that say that it has 3, some that it's like 50. Like many other monsters in Greek mythology, Hydra is a unique creature, and also like many other monsters in Greek mythology, it is the child of Typhon and Echidna. Other monsters with this parentage include Chimera and Cerberus. Hydra was trained by the goddess Hera to fight Heracles, Hera having a known antipathy for her husband Zeus's illegitimate children in general, and Heracles in particular. Now, one detail that comes up in a good number of the stories, but which I don't remember hearing when I, you know, heard about this story or read about it as a kid, is that most of the Hydra's heads are mortal, but one of them is immortal. And so at the end, Heracles defeats this head by pinning it to the ground with a big rock, which is a classic, like, deal with an enemy that can't be killed kind of move. So as one of his 12 labors, Heracles fights the Hydra, but every time he cuts off one of its heads, 2 new heads spring up where he cuts one off. Although that's actually not in every version of the story. That, to me, seems like the most common Hydra element, but it's actually not in every telling. So in many versions, you know, the ones where the heads are coming back, Heracles enlists the help of Iolaos to scorch the stumps of the heads so that they won't, like, grow anew. And there are some accounts which explain that this is why this doesn't actually count as one of the labors, because Heracles didn't do it alone. Now, I read somewhere that this is an attempt to reconcile different versions of the stories, that there were some stories about the 10 tasks of Heracles, and there were some stories about the 12 tasks of Heracles, and so this detail comes from people who were trying to explain why, like, oh, well, there were 12 tasks, but some of them didn't count, as a kind of continuity fix-up. Whether that's true, I couldn't tell you. Speaking of not going into the fight alone, the Hydra also was not fighting alone. During its fight with Heracles, it was assisted by a giant crab. And after the battle, Hera took both of these creatures that had been defeated and set them among the stars, which is the origin of the constellations Hydra and Cancer. Now, Cancer obviously went on to big things. Hydra is more of a deep pull, only for your real ancient astronomy heads. And if you'd like to hear some of what the ancient Greek poet Hesiod has to say about Hydra and other monsters born from Typhon and Echidna, you can hear me quoting from the Theogony in episode 29. I won't repeat it here because it basically says Hydra's a big scary monster, Typhon and Echidna are his parents. So looking at these stories, what can we identify as the sort of essential qualities of the Hydra? You know, what makes a Hydra, and not just like a dragon with a bunch of heads? So most obviously, it is a water monster. I mean, it's called a Hydra. Its name comes from the Greek word for water. Additionally, it's a serpent. So, you know, we're used to thinking, I think, of a Hydra as having a, you know, four-legged dragon-like body with a bunch of long necks ending in monsters' heads. That's certainly what a Hydra looks like in Warhammer. It's typically how a Hydra is depicted in D&D, but that is a medieval creation and not what you typically get in ancient Greek depictions of the Hydra, where it is definitely a snake, certainly in most of them. I think of the four-footed body as being dragon-like, but of course, a drakon in Greek myth is more of a serpent, and I think that Seneca calls the Hydra a draco. So there's that, you know, dragon in its modern sense, or its medieval sense even, hadn't emerged as a category at this time. I would say that dragons are fiery while Hydra is watery, but of course, this is D&D, they're definitely watery dragons, and for that matter, there are lots of mythologies in which dragons are much more like watery creatures. Having lots of heads is of course another key feature of the Hydra, and I think it's sort of where its unique scariness comes from. The idea is, I think, that since we're talking about a venomous serpent, the terror comes from the chance to be bitten, and the more heads you have, the more chances you have to bite someone. So this is, you can sort of tie this into what I was saying about giant animals. A snake isn't necessarily all that much more frightening for being gigantic, because the whole thing about a snake or a spider or a scorpion is that it is dangerous out of proportion to its size. It doesn't necessarily get scarier because it gets bigger, because its ability to go unnoticed is one of the things that makes it scary. But the many heads of the Hydra mean more opportunities to attack, and of course they also add that note of uncanniness or unnaturalness, which makes a great mythological monster. The thing with the heads being cut off and regrowing has been interpreted as a metaphor for vegetation, right? Like cutting a plant only to see it regrow in the next year. I get the analogy, but to me it always seems like 18th and 19th century folklorists are very specifically interested in interpreting things as vegetation metaphors. Kind of a Fraser thing, I guess. A Victorian folklorist never saw something they couldn't interpret as a metaphor for corn specifically. So I don't think that that's a very interesting approach to take in-game. So in games, you know, I think that the Hydra played straight works pretty well as a monster. It's got a distinctive visual identity, and I think that that identity isn't played out yet. You know, I think that there's definitely still fun to be had with the many-headed Hydra. You could include it in the kind of dragon family if you liked, or you could keep it separate. It fits in pretty well in a range of different watery natural environments, your swamps and hot springs and so on. I don't think of it as a monster of the sea. I don't think it's that kind of water creature. You can imagine a Hydra being used by a villain. I mean, in the story of Heracles fighting the Hydra, it is not used by, but it is sort of put where it is by an antagonist to threaten Heracles. You could certainly imagine a Hydra being chained up and used as a superpowered guard dog monster by some kind of baddie. You could even justify the theming, because, like, normally I look a little askance at, like, Yuan-Ti hanging out with reptilian monsters all the time, like, where they never meet anything that's not a reptile. But here, I guess it kind of makes sense. I believe Yuan-Ti are more resistant to poison, or if they're not, they should be. Anyway, lots of creatures that are poisonous tend to have poison resistance in modern versions of D&D, and creatures that are immune to or resistant to poison might use a poisonous monster as muscle, knowing that it was less threatening to them. This is, of course, also another monster that has been genericized by D&D, right? So we go from the Hydra to a Hydra. I think this one actually works reasonably well, so I don't know how I feel about the Minotaur going to a Minotaur, but the Minotaur has like a story. It has a backstory. It has, I mean, not quite a personality, but there's a human aspect to it that makes it feel like a character, even if that may mainly come from how later writers have decided to treat it. But I don't get that out of Hydra at all. It's just a big snaky monster. So I think it's okay to have a Hydra. I think baddies riding on Hydras look a bit daft. You know, the structure of it, the kind of form of it doesn't necessarily look very good. Or like sending a bunch of Hydras into battle, I don't think that necessarily looks good. They tend to be depicted with their bellies quite low to the ground. They look a bit daft. Unless you're making an explicit reference to the Book of Revelation, where there is a many-headed beast which is being ridden. So I guess you could get that in there. I believe there's a big Hydra-type monster in Chronopia, a topic that we covered a couple of special episodes ago. So I think the Hydra as is, it's a pretty good D&D monster. I think it's got some kind of name recognition. I think it's got a specific feature that allows it to kind of fight a whole party at once, which is always pretty nice. So I don't know that this is necessarily a monster that needs too much, like, zhuzhing up. But if you did want to zhuzh it up, I think the thing to do would be to base your up zhuzhing on one of the Hydra's sort of main traits. So we said that Hydras are watery, venomous, immortal slash regenerating, and many-headed. Now, not every part of that is present in every myth, but I think we could say that that is like the median Hydra, right? Or the mode Hydra, I guess. The most commonly occurring Hydra has all of those features, you know, más o menos. But for the most part, they have that cluster of traits. And I think that good monster zhuzhing plays off what the monster's qualities already are. That's what makes it, you know, finding something more fun to do with the bugbear and not just like having a completely different monster and calling it a bugbear. That doesn't mean just taking one of the central traits and exaggerating it, which is what you sometimes get, but it also doesn't mean just revising the monster into something completely different. You know, if that's the case, why make it a bugbear? This is a little bit how I feel with every new version of orcs in a fantasy role-playing game, where the orcs are essentially just Klingons. You know, they're a proud warrior people, etc., etc. But I think keeping some kind of link to the core traits helps us make a better Hydra. So, for instance, we could use the idea of the regenerating Hydra and focus on the idea that there's one immortal head and all the other ones are mortal. So perhaps the severed Hydra head that remains immortal is trapped on the rock or whatever, but ultimately someone finds it. What would it want? What would they want with it? You know, I presume it wants a body, so maybe they're trying to find a way to get it a new body, or maybe they're keeping it so that they can harvest its venom, right? Which is what Heracles does. He uses the Hydra's venom to anoint his own arrows. Maybe the Hydra is gradually regrowing new necks and heads, so it's going to grow a new neck, and then it's going to grow a new body, and then from that new body, it's going to grow necks with heads on them. I don't have a thing to say about this other than that the word rhizome flashed into my head. And that made me think of the Hydra being, you know, some kind of decentralized network. It's like Wolverine or whatever. It can regrow itself from one cell of its body. I don't have a good image there, but I think there might be something to it. Maybe the Hydra needs to be immersed in the water to regrow its missing parts. Maybe the Hydra is in the wrong place, like some ancient hero cut off the immortal head and was like, threw it down into some dark place, like, oh, I shall throw it into this bottomless abyss. There may it rot to never return and trouble the world of mortals again. And then someone tells the PCs, like, good news, you know, you just have to go and get the blue jewel from the bottomless abyss. And I'm like, oh, great, now there's a Hydra down there. I like the idea of the Hydra as a water or marsh creature. You know, I feel like marshes are a very fantasy-y, horror-y landscape, right? They're kind of liminal places. Places where the borders between different kinds of things are a little unclear, where there are safe paths and there are treacherous paths, and then there are paths that you don't go into at all, where dangerous animals like snakes or alligators or crocodiles could easily be, where you can do interesting things with visibility and mobility. So unlike something like a dungeon, where typically the things that obstruct your visibility and the things that obstruct your mobility are the same, here you might have something like a treacherous path, these kinds of like causeways that maybe it's not obvious where they are, or like partially submerged logs or things, so that you could see where a threat is coming from but not actually get to it. Or alternatively, you could have mist rising up from the marsh that was easy to move through but not easy to see through. And I like playing with those concepts. You know, decoupling visibility and mobility can make for interesting conflicts. And I'm not just saying that because I play a mainly ranged combatant in the D&D game that I play in. I love to set myself up in a situation where visibility is good and mobility is not, because it means I'm less likely to get minced. And I like that sort of terrain ambiguity. Is this land or water? You know, I think that's always a productive site for like fun images. The Hydra in that sort of unclear landscape seems to lend itself to a two-part setup with a reveal. So like you're fighting a serpent that rises from the water. You kill it and it splashes back into the water, but then now two serpents are coming. And more serpents are coming until finally the whole bulk of the thing rises up out of the mire, draped in, you know, weeds and lily pads, and you realize that what you're fighting is a Hydra. So that's a cool reveal, and it also feels like a good way to get around the problem of players knowing what to do with a monster, right? Because it's a common complaint that players know what the solutions to monster problems are, right? Vampires, dig through the heart. Hydra, cut off the heads, burn the stumps. Bowler-headed trickster, get him to say his own name backwards. Like, because there's a pleasure in recognizing these archetypes, but also because they are so well known, there's no challenge in figuring out their weakness. So maybe revealing the nature of the monster partway through, you still get to keep that pleasing sense of recognition. Because I do think that when people say, oh no, a Hydra, that has a little more oomph to it than, oh no, a Slod. But on the other hand, you have the problem that what gives them that oomph also makes them more, you know, they're more accessible, but that also means they're more accessible. So revealing the nature of the monster partway through gives you a pleasing sense of recognition without just being like, whoops, fireball, on round two. Having said that, I guess burning things in a swamp could be something of a challenge as well. In one version of the Heracles story, Ilias sets fire to a hole, like wood, around the area in order to get the fire to burn the Hydra's necks, which seems excessive. I assume there was some story about that wood having burnt down, and they're like, oh yes, that's because that happened when Ilias was fighting the Hydra. Now I have this notion of a Hydra as like the feared monster of a particular swamp and all the like swamp folk, who I imagine as Amos Moses from the hit song Amos Moses, talking about how one time they saw the Hydra, or like, you know, one time their grandpappy saw the Hydra, but they think he was just making it up. There's a line in Cthulhu Dark, I think, that I first heard about on an episode of Fearful Black Dragon, where the author Graham Walmsley talks about the importance of having someone tell the PCs not to go somewhere. You know, this is the guy at the side of the road that says, the strange old place. Oh, you mean the old strange place. You can't get there from here. Or, don't ye go up to that there old castle, sir. It be haunted. And I think that swamp-dwelling gator hunters warning you specifically to stay away from the Hydra is a good thing, because a swamp-dwelling gator hunter is presumptively a tough guy. So I think when you meet this tough guy, and the tough guy's like, yeah, you don't want to mess with them old Hydras. You know, that's worth something. Unfortunately, of course, you can't say old Hydras, because then it'll sound like you were saying that old Hydra is in the swamp, and that's a whole different watery monster. I thought for a bit about the idea of the Hydra as a metaphor. I mean, most famously in Marvel Comics, right, the idea of something many-headed or many-limbed is a sort of standard metaphor for conspiracy. Conspiracies are often depicted as octopuses. I definitely remember World War I Russian propaganda posters, which depicted a Hydra-like monster with different heads representing Germany, Austria, Hungary, and Turkey. So, you know, there's that there, right, the idea that all our many foes are merely manifestations of the same monster, whatever that is, imperialism. And of course, that idea of, you know, cutting one down only to see two replace it, like, that's the Hydra thing. I once ran an over-the-edge game in which Arthurian archetypes were manifesting in modern Britain as superheroes, and I had a bunch of kind of like white power skinhead types as villains who were collectively a manifestation of the white dragon, the bad guy dragon in Arthurian legend, sort of. But it would have been cooler if they were a Hydra. Although, I mean, there's no Hydra in an Arthurian world. But, like, having a bunch of bad guys who are somehow the mortal manifestation of a single mythical bad guy would work better with a multi-headed monster, you know, that would feel more appropriate. So, yeah, Hydras. I don't think they need much zhuzhing up, to be honest. I think they're a pretty solid core concept. I think much of the time, if you're going to change them around, monster books tend to zhuzh monsters up by changing the monster because of the way in which those creatures are presented in those books, which is typically without very much context. So I can't make a new entry for an ogre by just explaining that sometimes it'd be cool to have an ogre in a tumble-down cottage on the end of the woods instead of, like, in a dungeon or whatever. Presumptively, you put the monster wherever you like. But I do honestly think that a lot of the time, the most interesting thing to do to change a monster is to change its context. And that thinking of monsters outside of their contexts is how we occasionally get bland fights on infinite grids of blue squares, which, you know, I think we can do better then. Okay, so those are all the opinions on Hydras that I have time for today. Cassandra, thank you very much once again for your support, and I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Everyone else, remember that if you'd like to be like Cassandra and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. Or, if you would prefer, there are other levels you can pledge at, each with its own reward. In our next episode, we're gonna be taking a look kind of at another many-headed monster, as we look at an enemy with a shared consciousness. So I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@Dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.